Natural Living with Gary Null, exploring the nature and politics of medicine, health, nutrition, and the environment. And now your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, and I'd like to welcome you to this program. Today, we'll be continuing with our ongoing forum of exploring important health issues that generally do not get the type of attention that I believe they deserve and certainly are not generally dealt with in an objective and fair-handed way. I'm going to be doing hopefully 15 different topics, plus time permitting, I'll also be taking calls on health issues that are important to you as well. Let's go to the first of these issues. And this comes from Jonathan Leek, science editor, on the issues of high power utility wires. Now, all across the country, in the United States and other countries, we've been led to believe that there is really no problem with these. They do not pose any major risk. Think again. And this is the title of the opening article. Families may sue over cancer linked to pylons. High voltage power cables have been officially linked to cancer for the first time. A study shows that children living near them run a small but significant increased risk of falling victim to the disease. Sir Richard Doll, the epidemiologist who discovered the link between smoking and lung cancer in the 1960s, will this week warn that children living near electricity power lines are at an increased risk for leukemia. He is also expected to say that there may be a link with adult cancers, but that this is unproven. His work was commissioned by the National Radiological Protection Board, the government's radiation watchdog. So it's the first time that at least a British government body has accepted the link between cancer and power lines. And of course, what's going to happen now is a lot of Americans will begin to re-examine where they live. I did my first show on the danger of power lines 15 years ago. And then I did a series of four programs over a two-week period. And at that time, the evidence was not conclusive, but highly suspect that the lines did cause problems. And what I had done is I went through areas of Pennsylvania and New York and New Jersey and Connecticut, mainly in rural areas. And I asked farmers, had they noticed any difference in the births of calves and any damage to their immune systems, and there was a very disproportionate high number of stillbirths and malformed and other problems that were not happening to farmers who had similar livestock but who were not living near overhead power lines. And in some cases, the entire farm was within a quarter-mile grid of those massive overhead transformers. And I brought that on the air. And that was the first time anyone had actually gone out and interviewed a whole series of farmers to see what the reaction was. Now, the big concern was, what would that do to a family living within that wave? And it's like an arc, and the arc spreads about 250 yards on either side of a power line. So just pay attention to that. It's something to consider. Separately, we are not drinking enough liquid in the United States that is healthy. We're drinking too many colas and beers and coffee, all of which are diuretic and actually take more water out of the body than what they leave in. And this is something that was sent over by someone on an email who didn't leave a name, so I can't attribute it to them. But it was interesting and it's accurate. And it says, we all know that water is important, but I've never seen it written down quite like this before. 75% of Americans are chronically dehydrated. That's correct. Now, just as an aside, each year there are thousands of people in nursing homes who are dying from dehydration. Part of the problem is, a catch-22. People don't know when they need water. The desire for water, the sense of quenching our thirst, is not adequate. Because long ago in our lives, we frequently disrupt that sensory center in the brain that tells us, you're thirsty, drink. So we either suffer from hydrodipsia, more often than not, or polydipsia. So when we do need water, we don't know it. Now, you really should be about 74% water. Most people I've tested, and I've tested thousands, with an impedance test, they're only anywhere from 67 to 70%. That's a tremendous dehydration factor. Senior citizens are most at risk because they just don't drink a lot. And so people just die from the consequences of dehydration. Shouldn't happen. In 37% of Americans, the thirst mechanism is so weak that it's mistaken for hunger. Even mild dehydration will slow down your metabolism by 3%. That causes you to gain weight. That causes fatigue. And also one of the signs of altered metabolism is depression. One glass of water taken late at night will stop hunger pangs in almost 100% of dieters, studied at the University of Washington study. And that's to help people who have late night cravings, who've been used to eating something, generally something sweet, while they watch television or sitting in bed. Well, that's unnecessary calories going into the system. Not only will that put weight on you, but it puts it on in the worst way, because when you eat a breakfast, and if you've exercised, your metabolism is speeded up, so therefore you're benefiting. But when you don't eat a breakfast, and your body is going through a fatigue syndrome, and your energy level is low around 10 o'clock, and you start reaching for something sweet or a caffeine, sugar, to boost your energy back up, you're artificially stimulating the adrenal glands. That's not healthy. Now, later at night, what will generally happen is you haven't exercised, but you may be fatigued from a combination of stress, working too hard, but that's not exercise. Remember, the fact that you're tired or even sore doesn't mean that you've benefited aerobically or anaerobically. So now you want to treat yourself to something. You're hungry, and you eat a snack. Then you go to sleep. Well, that snack will be working with a lowered metabolism, because when you sleep, your metabolism drops substantially. Your pulse rate slows down. Your blood pressure slows down. Everything slows down when you're asleep. Digestion really slows down. And yet you've got this sugar in your body. You've got this dairy, ice cream, whatever. And there's no need for it. So it ends up becoming fat. And it's toxic. Where had you eaten a good breakfast or drank a good breakfast in liquid form and not had excess calories from non-nutritious foods? See, calories only count when they're from adulterated foods, not when they're from good foods. And in fact, you would be hard to gain weight by eating good foods and exercising. In fact, last evening, had a wonderful evening last night, I finished filming a television program for PBS stations around the United States. It's going to be airing in the near future, and I'll let everyone know. It's a brand new special. We've been working on this special for about 6 months and have been filming segments of it, but the actual studio shoot with all the audience, and we were packed. It was really interesting because every single person who had gone through previous health support groups, who had stuck with it, was there. We were just inundated with positive stories. Across the board, lost weight, lost weight, lost weight. And we were talking about some 100-pound, 120-pound, 130-pound weight losses of people who have never been able to lose weight before. Every kind of illness imaginable, from breast cancer and prostate cancer and brain cancer and congestive heart failure and fibromyalgia and arthritis and diabetes. Depression. One woman was on 5 medicines for depression, and no more medicines, no more depression, no more breast cancer. It was just wonderful to see, especially when you consider that none of those have been treated as conditions, just the side effect from making healthier lifestyle choices. Anyhow, the idea was that people were talking about, gee, I used to count calories, or one woman said I would count grams of fat. And I would, you know, just be beside myself trying to figure out what to eat, because I'd be so paranoid about whether it be a gram of fat in something. And she said, when you told us that we weren't going to count calories and you didn't care how much fat we had, she went home And she thought, well, I'm never going back there. This guy's crazy. And her friend came back, and her friend began the program, started to lose weight. And she said, well, what are you eating? Carrot sticks? She said, no, I'm eating everything. I'm eating more than what I ate before. Never hungry. So then 2 months later, when she saw her friend lose weight and feel better, she came back in, and she stuck for a year and a half. And then she completed it. Now she's gone on. She says that her arthritis in her knees are gone. Her depression's gone. Allergies totally gone. Her twice to three times a year cold and flu gone. Chronic bad breath is gone. Thinning hair is gone. Broken nails easily and discolored nails are gone. And her skin looks better. And she has energy through the ceiling. And I said, well, are you counting calories? Nope. Eat everything I want as far as it's healthy and exercise. Because when people are healthy and they're depressed, they're not going to run out and eat something that's bad for them. They have better ways of dealing with it. They're not going to sublimate. But the average American, they don't eat because they're looking to supply nutrients and phytochemicals, antioxidants, and de-age the body, lubricate the joints, build the defense mechanism for the immune system. They're not eating for that reason. They're eating because they're frustrated, or they're socializing, or because they're hungry, or because they're nervous or anxious, or because there's a comfort element to the food. They eat for a lot of reasons other than just nutrition. And the choices are almost never healthy. And then they're adding in the extra calories that don't count, so they're overfed and undernourished. So it's just a unique phenomena when people realize that what you put into the body makes all the difference in the world of how you feel. And one of the things people historically put in the body was caffeine, and with caffeine, generally sugar. Well, that caffeine sugar is a 1-2 punch to your adrenal glands. It just knocks them out. And your thyroid gland, and even a subtle alteration in the thyroid gland will cause you to gain weight and cause depression and cause fatigue. And those three go all hand in hand. It's generally depression, fatigue, and weight gain, and defect in the immune system, making you more susceptible to other infections. And I heard that time and time and time and time and again from people who have changed and they no longer have that. But these are not necessarily radical things you have to do. In other words, you don't have to go out there and pig out on something. The average American who may be thinking they're conscientious in the food choice they're making don't realize it's just one single piece of bread, a single slice of bread, like toast in the morning or a bagel, which is just another form of bread. It's just dough that's been processed in a different way. That simple little addition to the diet, if you had one extra slice per day, that's all, is going to gain 10 pounds at the end of the year just from the extra calories they bring into the body, because it's a worthless piece of carbohydrate. But more importantly, if you're allergic to wheat, here's what's going to happen. Fatigue, brain fog, where you just aren't as clear and focused. You just want to take a nap. You just feel kind of tired. You can't remember things. It's not the best time of day when you've had that. And then the later in the day you get when you have wheat, the worse it is for you, because your body's metabolism can clear the effects of gluten in about 2-2.5 hours if it's in the morning, because you're highly anabolic. You're on a high energy level. But when you go after 4 o'clock in the afternoon, you start catabolic activity. So your system changes from anabolic, building up high energy, to catabolic, slowing down, cleansing, detoxifying. It's the natural rhythm of the body. So when you have an allergic substance, will also be of significance. It's in the morning, when it's easier for the body to clear, or in the afternoon, when it's more difficult, or at night, when it can really make you tired. And as a result, is our energy depleted at night, and hence the consequence of our social activity limited to not having any energy to enjoy a whole lot of things, so we kind of veg out in front of the television or sit in front of a computer or lay around because we've had something we've been allergic to at dinner. And the answer is yes. Whereas if you did not have allergic foods and you had plenty of water, you're going to have more energy. water allows more energy. Water can turn off at night appetite for those exotic things you have, unhealthy things. Lack of water is one of the number one triggers of daytime fatigue. And preliminary research indicates that 8 to 10 glasses of water a day could significantly change your back pain, joint pain, up to 80% of the time in sufferers. I had a physician who was sitting beside me on a plane trip last week. And he was sitting there, and I was writing. I use time on the plane. It's a great time for me because I write. And we'd hit some very turbulent weather because of some rainstorms. And I'm looking down at his hand. He's kind of the white knuckle ride, bouncing around. This was not a big jet. And I'm used to turbulence. It doesn't bother me at all. And I realize how much of a wingspan you've got, that it can go up and down before it breaks. And you got to realize that pilot's as conscientious about landing safely as you are. And so you just relax and you just realize you're in competent hands. You almost never hear of a plane crash because of turbulence. In any case, he's all fidgety, so he starts to talk, and I'm talking with him. And he says, "Do I know you?" And I said, "I don't think so." He said, "No, I've seen you somewhere." I said, "Well, where do you live?" And he said, told me where he lived. And I said, "Well, I was just on PBS out there." He said, "Oh, I thought I saw you. You don't really believe all that nonsense, do you?" I said, "Of course I believe it. Why do you say it's nonsense?" So we had this long 3-hour discussion. At the end of it, he's a rheumatologist, turns out. I said, at the end of it, I said, "What would you think if I told you that last year 16,000 patients of rheumatologists like yourself died from taking nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories just for arthritis?" He said, "It's nonsense, not true." I said, "Yes, it is. Look at the July issue of the New England Journal of Medicine last year, feature article. And that's a gross understatement because the commissioner of the FDA said only 1 in 28 adverse effects is ever reported as such. So the real figure of how many people died from nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories could be up around 300,000 or 400,000, possibly as high as 500,000. I said, "Put it another way, you rheumatologists are killing almost as many people each year as cancer is killing. Put another way, each year you rheumatologists are causing the death of as many people in America each year as all of American casualties in the Second World War." And he looked at me and he said, and then he got into this whole discussion about quackery. I said, "Well, let's take a look at what quackery is. Define quackery." And then I said, "Well, isn't quackery charging a fee for a service or a product where you know or should know that it is of no value?" I said, "Well, nonsteroidal anti-inflammatories are dangerous. They do not change the underlying condition of arthritis. And so what benefit is it?" And then I went into hydration. I said, "I'll give you a little challenge, a friendly challenge. If you think that what I advocate is so ridiculous, and if you think that woman who came on the air unannounced, I didn't know she was in the studio, and who claimed that she had full-blown arthritis for 28 years, and she had had fibromyalgia for 13 years, and she was in a wheelchair for 4 years, and she was blown up on 27 different medications, including 4 for her arthritis and chronic pain and fibromyalgia. And when she came on, she'd lost 127 pounds, no longer has emphysema, arthritis, fibromyalgia, depression, congestive heart failure. And you thought that that was a fake? Well, you call Dr. Martin Feldman in New York City. Dr. Feldman is a board-certified neurologist, published 63 articles in scientific peer-reviewed journals, magna cum laude, Yale, College of Physicians and Surgeons at Columbia, assistant professor of neurology at Mount Sinai. He's one of you, except he is not only a clinician, but he's also an academic and a research scientist and a published author in the field. He not only did a complete full medical evaluation, but he interviewed the physicians who did the her primary care physicians, and has over 100 different medical documents on her. She's real. That's a real story. And we even had a picture of her from my very first lecture a year ago, December, when she showed up. And this picture was just taken by one of the people who was in a health support group in Los Angeles who was taking a picture of me. And there she is in the background in this wheelchair with an oxygen tanks and two nurses and breathing heavily. And her face was totally distorted from the cortisone she was being given by her arthritis, her rheumatologist. And she had blown up to over 260 pounds. I said, so... And he kept arguing the issue. He kept arguing it couldn't have happened. You know, you cannot reverse this. I said, well, I do it all the time. Arthritis is nothing for me to help a person reverse. It's child's play. It's almost pathetic. It's an embarrassment that I could take conditions that you consider incurable, untreatable, and reverse them completely. And I said, we got two ways of looking at it. Either you can continue to say it doesn't exist, in which case it won't in your mind, no matter what evidence is supported to the contrary. Or you can say, prove it, show me, in which case I could show you. Or there's a third way. Just try one thing on your patients. Just one single thing. They won't tar and feather you for being an extremist. Just ask them to take 1 gallon of water a day if they have arthritis. And 2 teaspoons of emulsified olive oil on an empty stomach. That's simple. That's not so difficult. And he said, why? I said, well, because I have found that almost 80% of people with arthritis have an immediate improvement within 4 or 5 days in their pain and swelling just by rehydrating the brain. And you can get an impedance test. It's only $20. And you can see for yourself hard, scientific, objective data, nothing subjective, objective, that here's what their percentage of water was before. You rehydrate them. It takes about 1 to 2 weeks to get fully hydrated. And here's what their hydration level is now. And see if the symptoms don't start to diminish. I said, you're going to see their energy go up, their fatigue come down. You're going to see better range of motion, more mobility, more distance they can move without fatigue. And he says, not possible. I said, okay, well, disprove me. Prove that I'm not right. Try it. I haven't heard from him. I doubt if I will hear from him. He was extremely angry. And here I am, a person he's never met. All he did was see me on television. And here was this woman who shows up because she lived in Huntington Beach. And I was on the Huntington PBS station 2 weeks ago, and she shows up because she was so thankful and so grateful for having been alive. Oh, I forgot to mention, her doctors gave her 3 weeks to live, and they wanted to put her on heart-lung machine respirator, and she said no. She said, I won't allow that. I'd just rather die. And because she had end-stage emphysema and end-stage congestive heart failure, we have the x-rays. We have all the medical evaluations. In fact, after that, she flew into New York with all of her medical records, spent 3 days here going through a battery of tests by physicians and specialists, all orthodox, no holistic, who confirmed that she had had all these things, 12 years of detailed medical records, and today has nothing. Emphysema, totally gone. Asthma, totally gone. Arthritis, gone. By the way, even with insulin and medication, they couldn't get her blood sugar below 300. It's 100 now, with no medication. Depression, she's off all Paxil, she's off of everything. And I just wanted to be able to prove objective, hard scientific evidence. It was just interesting, there she is. I didn't even recognize her when she popped up. Because last time I saw her, she was 270 pounds on a respirator and sitting in a wheelchair with oxygen. Here she was I'm getting ready to do the marathon. So I'm going to do the marathon with you. You told me when I was that day, you said, in 2 years from now, you won't be in this chair. You're going to be crossing the New York City Marathon and with a big smile on your face and your hands raised above your head. And you're going to see thousands of people cheering you. And I want you to write Pat on your shirt. So everybody's saying, go Pat. And then they're going to put a medal around your neck. And you're going to be a champion. He says, well, I believed you. And she said, I'm doing 6 miles a day. And instead of this rheumatologist simply asking for the evidence, looking at it, just dismissed it out of hand. So hopefully, at some point, he or others like him will realize that there's still things to learn. And we should keep ourselves open to what we don't know. If all we do is do what we know, then we've limited ourselves in so much of what there could be. Something as simple as drinking water. A mere 2% drop in body water can trigger short-term memory loss, trouble with basic math, difficulty focusing on the computer screen. And drinking 5 16-ounce glasses of water daily decreases the risk of colon cancer by 45%. By drinking 1 gallon of fresh, pure water a day, you can slash the risk of breast cancer by almost 40%. And in one study, 50% less likely to develop bladder cancer. So you see, we've confused the complexity and the contortions of disease with the simplicity of its solutions. Next issue. The annual pap smear may cause unnecessary stress. From Emma Patton Hitt, Reuters. A pap smear can detect early signs of cervical cancer, but women tested every year may receive no benefit over women who are tested less frequently, researchers said. Frequently tested women may also be at increased risk of unnecessary treatment and anxiety, according to investigators at the Center for Disease Control and Prevention. Researchers from the CDC came to this conclusion after analyzing data on 130,000 women who had had a first pap test reported as normal and at least one subsequent pap test during the next 36 months. If you went to GaryNoll.com, went to the issues page on iatrogenic issues, you'd see that there is a lot of danger in having excess or unnecessary testing done. You don't have to wait for the CDC to officially tell you you're being overtested. Also, it's generally not accurate. This comes from Reuters. Hot coffee and tea raise the cancer risk by 400%. People who prefer their piping hot cup of coffee or tea may be more having something more to concern themselves burning their mouth. According to a recent study, drinking very hot tea or coffee with milk appears to raise the risk of esophageal cancer. A study in the issue of the International Journal of Cancer found that drinking these beverages raised the risk of cancer by as much as 400%. Heavy consumption of meat, animal fat, and salt was associated with an increased risk of cancer, while eating plenty of fruits and vegetables and cereals and drinking green tea was found to be protective. Regular fruit consumption, for example, appeared to lower the risk of cancer by 63%, the investigator said. Quote, this adds evidence for a carcinogenic effect of chronic thermal injury in the esophagus induced by the consumption of very hot drinks. Unquote, according to Dr. Xavier Castellugo and his colleagues. So, think of all the people who each day wake up and have to have a half hot cup of coffee. Later they're having meat. Think of this. You're increasing your risk of cancer, but you decrease the risk of cancer by having fruits. Now, what's great about this is if you can decrease your risk of cancer by 73% by having lots of fruits, imagine if you juice the fruits. And which fruits have the most cancer protection? Red fruits. Watermelon, raspberries, pomegranates, cherries, blood oranges, pink grapefruit, papaya, mango. Now, the juice of the fruit is going to be far more concentrated because more of it's going to be digestible. So by having the fruit juice fresh made, you're getting the enzymes and the phytochemicals, antioxidants. So now that's going to protect you almost 100%. And then what if you took the concentration of the fruit, removed the sugar or the water, then you're getting almost 100 times concentration of the phytochemicals, and that's where you actually begin the process of repairing damage to the DNA. That's the key to reversing aging and the diseases associated with aging. They're not there yet. They're not juicing yet. They're not at phytochemical concentration yet. Sooner or later, I believe they will be. This comes from London. What is safe to eat? From Bascom Guffin. Well, European consumers hit by another food scare over mad cow disease may face a dilemma as they enter supermarkets to buy their weekly food and ask, what's safe to eat here? For many in Britain, the list of safe choices has been whittled away by scares over salmonella in eggs, E. coli in cooked meats, bovine spongiform encephalopathy in cattle and sheep. Fruits and vegetables have been hit by news that they may be covered in so-called pesticide cocktails, and as for pasta, it may be made out of genetically modified wheat. So what's on or what's off the menu in Europe? Well, beef. Britain, the BSE, first struck British herds in 1986 and claimed its first human 10 years later. More than 80 people have died from new variant Creutzfeldt-Jakob disease. And Britain registered over 1,000 cases of BSE in cattle this year. France has banned the sale of T-bone steaks and animal feed made from ground-up cattle after a rise in the number of BSE cases. Two people have died there. Spain said it had detected the first case of BSE. European Union farmers' ministers agreed to test more. Pork. There's a bad one. Pork and poultry may contain high-resistant superbugs due to the overuse of antibiotics in animal feed. Belgium, Italian police in June, seized some 10,000 imported raw Belgium hams suspected of being contaminated with dioxins. Belgium found carcinogens like dioxin had entered the food chain, where? Through animal feed. Contaminated animal feed ends up causing a contaminated animal. Britain, more than 30,000 pigs have been slaughtered in Britain to prevent the spread of swine fever. Lamb and mutton, well, Britain, the Advisory Food Standard Agency, called last month for urgent screening of sheep to check whether they had been infected with BSE. Poultry, in the late 1990s, surveys found there was a spread among chickens of Campylobacter, a bacteria which can cause infection, sometimes paralysis. Other earlier figures found that over 50% of chicken on sale in Britain had salmonella or Campylobacter pathogens. Yes, and you get it even when it's cooked or deep fried. In France, last month, French officials said 23 tons of duck confit, cooked duck meat, preserved in its own fat, turned out to be rotten in a routine inspection. What do they do to keep you from knowing it's rotten? Well, if it's a deli, they can just grind it up and put some mayonnaise in it. You eat it as a tuna salad, a chicken salad, an egg salad. Never eat any kind of prepared salad from a deli. I interviewed a guy that worked in a deli. In fact, he worked in several. There was some pork this one deli had, and it had been there for about a month. Started to stink. One day the guy walks in and he's working with it, and it's kind of squiggly in that it, every time he touches it, water comes out of it. It's oozing and smelly. Owner comes over, says, okay. Fills up one of those mop buckets with a cleaning detergent, puts it in there, and sure enough, it killed the smell. They were able to go ahead and cut it up and put it into a salad. The idea was always put it in a salad with mayonnaise or mustard and relish. Nobody will know. Same thing happened on many different occasions where it was too bad, starting to smell, and really was rotten, they just make it into a salad mix. You really take great risks when you eat in delis, these kind of foods. And as far as the regular fruits and vegetables, the Food Standards Agency has said that almost 2% of the 2,500 samples of food included potatoes, pears, and lettuce had pesticide residues over the legal limit. Bread? High-fiber bread can contain pesticide residues because they tend to collect in the outer layers of the grain. So, what to eat? Now, those people are just going to give up and say there's nothing to eat, so why should I bother and go ahead and eat whatever they have been eating? What about organic? There's tons of organic produce and natural breads. There's natural grains, nuts, and seeds and legumes that don't have anything wrong with them. All good things. That wasn't even considered. That's how much bias is around. This is a report from Mark Conley, and it's in some letter to the editor. It says, today the New York Times report, not today, today, but when this was written a little while ago, it says, today the New York Times reported that despite the Food and Drug Administration asking pharmaceutical companies that they not use materials from cattle raised in countries where there is a risk of mad cow disease, a quote, regulators discovered last year that five companies, including some of the world's largest drug companies, were still using ingredients from these countries to make nine widely used vaccines, unquote. It's not known if any of the nine vaccines involved in the investigation were actually contaminated. The vaccines include nine common ones given to millions of children. The Times article reported that these include vaccines to prevent polio, diphtheria, and tetanus, as well as anthrax, given to soldiers serving in the Persian Gulf. FDA officials said there's only a very slight chance of a vaccine being contaminated. They calculated the odds of being infected with mad cow disease at 1 in 40 million to 1 in 40 billion in the worst case scenario. No details were provided as to how they came up with these numbers. Point of fact, if you went down to the FDA and you snuck up to a window and stood on someone's shoulders and looked in, you'd see that they have a dog, just a dog that they pay, and it taps around on a calculator, and it came up with these figures, because there's no rhyme or reason to these figures. There's no way they could have come up with these figures. There's no science to it. But it doesn't matter. The Times article named GlaxoSmithKline, Aventis, and American Home Products, who are now agreed to stop using the suspected products that include bovine blood, fetal calf serum, and meat broth. FDA officials found out last year in interviews that some of the pharmaceutical companies were not complying with the earlier FDA request. In one investigation, the Times reported that the FDA, quote, discovered that the company, which it will not identify, was using cattle parts from a very high-risk country, unquote. The FDA has not recalled the suspected vaccines that are currently on pharmaceutical shelves and in hospitals. And dietary supplements with glandulars in them were also questioned in the Times article. The FDA has asked supplement manufacturers not to use materials derived from cows in suspect countries, but only inspect 60 of 1,000 supplemental manufacturers each year. No one can say for certain that all supplements manufacturers are complying with the FDA request. Well, if you use vegan capsules, then it's not a problem. If you're not using anything from an animal, that's not a problem. So, those are issues that are of concern. I'm Gary Nall. Let's take a few calls. My number is 212-209-2900, 212-209-2900. The issue today, health issues, yours or the issues around the country. Let's see if we might be able to get a handle on some of the issues you're dealing with, and I'll come back to some additional information I'd like to share with you. Let's ask our engineer in New York, and this is only for the people living in the tri-state New York area. Our show is heard all over the United States, but just taking calls from New York today. Hi, you're on the air. What's your name, please?
James.
Hi, James.
Hi, I want to ask you, If people are taking vitamin C, buffered vitamin C with calcium in it, how would they balance out their magnesium ratio?
Okay, a simple question. Good question. Thank you for asking that. What you need to have is approximately the same amount of magnesium as calcium. So if you looked at the amount of buffered calcium in a vitamin C, and let's say it says 100 milligrams, and simply take 100 milligrams of magnesium if you wanted to equal it out just at that level. But because we need about 1,300 to 1,500 milligrams of calcium and magnesium each day, you should take the total amount of calcium from a day, total amount of magnesium from a day, and these are easy figures to come up with. All you have to do is look at any food nutrient chart, see the foods you most commonly consume, how much of those foods you consume. It'll take you maybe 15 minutes. You could figure out on an average day how much you're getting of the nutrients coming in, and then simply ratchet it up to what you ultimately want to have. For example, if I go on a plane, I take a freezer bag, and you know one of the little Ziploc things, and I fill it up with powders, and then I say, let's say if I have 12 ounces of powder in that bag, and I'm going to use 3 ounces per day. Then I ask, what's in 3 ounces? Then I have to make sure I'm getting all my vitamins, minerals, and nutrients. So it's a very easy calculation. Therefore, if you should be where you're not able to eat or eat the foods you wish to eat, but you still want to make sure you get your nutrients, this way you can take them with you anywhere. Just measure it out. Because every nutritional product has to have a nutrition information label that tells you how much of a nutrient per serving size you're getting. So it's an easy calculation. We'll take another call. Your turn. What's your name, please?
Hello?
Hi. You're on the air.
Hi. My name is Rosanna. I just have a quick question. I'm hearing about soil depletion all the time. And how do we know, like, when I buy my vitamins, they say they make it from this much broccoli and this much onions. If there's soil depletion, we're robbed of nutrients, how can we trust that our vitamins have these nutrients in them?
Well, there's a difference. If you're getting your nutrients strictly from food and not taking any vitamins, there's no way you can know except by doing a standard USDA food analysis. And they have charts, and you can go to the charts, and they're free, and you can get them on the web, and it'll say, here's how much nutrients you're getting from broccoli or apples or whatever you're measuring. Now, that's a standard. That's not organic. Mm-hmm. Organic is almost always, of every study I've seen, is going to have more nutrients because they're adding nutrients back into the soil. When I'm doing some farming right now, and I had to add almost 8 inches of high-quality, natural soil builders to the soil. And I'm going to plant almost 100 variety of different lettuces. I'm doing some experiments now. Mm-hmm. And I'm giving the plant what it needs to survive. It's no different than a tree. When I planted a tree about 2 months ago, I dug a hole that was twice as deep and three times as wide as what was normal. And this guy's looking at me, this landscape architect, saying, what are you doing? And I said, because I want the bulb of that tree to be surrounded where all the villi and hair follicles of that plant system will be able to get nourishment. You'd put it into the ground, which is a little bit of mill organite, by the way, just recycled, garbage. And I didn't use mill organite. I used a far more broad base of sea vegetables and minerals from the sea, et cetera. And I said, so the difference is one plant is going to struggle to survive, never will be fully strong. First time winter comes, a harsh winter, it's going to die. This tree is going to get all the nutrients it needs because it has nice organic and full spectrum nutrients from which it can eat. A plant has to eat. All things have to eat. They have to have nutrients come in. So you have to look at the composition of what you've given it to eat. So anyhow, going back to the issue, if the average farmer grows broccoli and they have not rebuilt the soil, then they can get broccoli to grow, but it's going to be deficient. In fact, we're finding a lot of food today is very deficient. You wouldn't know it's deficient by looking at it. It doesn't show from the external looks. And that's why I always suggest you properly supplement. Now, if you take the nutrients that are most important every day in vitamin supplementation form, then you're getting 100% of each of those nutrients. There's no guessing. It's on the label. It has to be in the product. But you can never know how much of a nutrient is in a food. An orange grown in the summer will not have the same amount of vitamin C as an orange grown in the winter. Two different amounts of vitamin C. Same tree, two cycles, different. An orange grown in California will give you a different amount of vitamin C or bioflavonoids than an orange grown in Florida or an orange grown in Texas. So we cannot correct for all these variables, organic, non-organic. So eat the best that you possibly can, as consciously as you can, and then supplement intelligently. This way you're getting 100% of what you need in the way of supplements. All right?
Thank you.
Okay. I'm Gary Nall. Your turn. You're on the air. What's your name, please? Hi. Just speak
up.
Hi.
My name is Kim. I have a question about gelatin caps.
Yes.
I've been not eating dairy for a number of years now, or any animal products, especially not beef. And I'm wondering what the risk is in taking supplements that are enclosed in gelatin capsules.
All right, well, it's a very good question, and one that many of us are extremely concerned about. On the one hand, if you had particular illnesses that where certain glands in your body were burned out, diseased, dehydrated of nutrients and needed a glandular program, it would be hard put today to find a source of the raw glandulars that you could use with safety. When I traveled to Europe to actually go to the clinics where they were giving the glandular implants, Dr. Klaus Martens plant in Germany is one example. And he actually produced it for a lot of the other clinics, including the one Renaissance clinic down in the Bahamas at that time, Dr. Popoff and Dr. Goldwag's clinic. They did a good job down there as far as care and holistic therapies. They're closed now. Anyhow, they had sheep that were raised in a pristine environment. No pesticides were allowed on the grass. No genetic engineering allowed. And everything was done, processed right on the ranch or in the big farm they had. And I went through every single step of that. And my concern, and I raised this to the people there. There were 53 people at his clinic at the time, and I interviewed all of them. And then there was a little meeting they had where Dr. Martin asked them, would they be willing to have a discussion with me? And they did. And what I asked him was, I said, is it right that we should sacrifice a lamb, or fetus of a lamb in this case, to give you something that can rejuvenate your system where the rest of your lifestyle is counterproductive to a healthy life? If you were going to die without it and you needed it, there would be a different equation. But everyone here is smoking and drinking, and I asked one woman, I said, you tell me that you're a restaurant owner in Dallas and that you smoke, you drink, you don't take care of yourself, don't eat anything right food, you're highly stressed, but once every 5 years you come over here and you get these injections. I said, is this the way it was meant to be? You know, and their argument was, well, if this works, and it does to a degree, then our lifestyle is immaterial. And I said, well, to the contrary. I said, there's only so many times I believe you can rejuvenate a system in the body that you've depleted. And I said, but what does it tell us about our lives on spiritual levels and ethical levels to the ethic of self? You know it's not good to smoke. You know it's not good to drink. You know it's not good to do the things you do. And yet that means you're self-abusing and then saying, okay, I've abused myself. Now let me go and get this fetal implant from these calves. I said, have any of you actually gone out and watched how it's made, the stuff? You're sitting here in this beautiful resort, and you're getting all these gourmet meals, and they're going to come in, and they're going to shoot you in the rear end with the implants. I said, why don't you come with me today and watch how it's done? Four of them agreed to, four out of the 50-some. And so we went over, and they went into this building, and my buddy went with me. He had never been on any of my research trips, and he said, hey, I'd like to go. And I said, fine. So I took him through the whole system so I could see the sheep in the meadows. And then here's this one sheep, and it's in this room, and in comes the people, and they stand against a wall. And they actually brought in two sheep. And it's a very sterile room. It looks like you've all seen rooms of morgues, you know, where the pathologist is doing the autopsies. That's what it looked like. And in comes this fella, this big German guy, and he's got this long, kind of a rubber, like a cloth in front of him. And he goes over to the sheep, and he grabs a sheep by the back of the head, a hair, and brings it over and puts it on a hook, puts a hook between the skin on the back of its neck, and then slits its throat, and it's squiggling all over the place. And then he starts to cuts a line from the throat down, clear down to the anus, cuts the skin around its four paws, and pulls the skin off. Sheep's still alive. You can see it. Its eyes are looking at you. And it's looking around, and it's trying to move. It's trying to get off this hook, and it can't. And then he takes a knife, and he cuts open the belly and takes out all the glands and organs. It's still alive. Only when it cuts the heart, about a minute later, then it's finally dead. And then they take those, and they take them into a room, and put them in a sterile container where they'll be pulverized and processed into a solution where it can be implanted in the person's body. Well, while this is going on, the other sheep is watching this, and it's running and hiding behind everyone's legs. And then when the guy comes over to grab the sheep, it runs and it gets right underneath my buddy's legs. And the guy, the German fellow, goes over to grab it underneath my friend's legs, and my friend is just upset. I mean, he didn't know what to do. And the sheep looks up at him. And he's looking at the sheep, and he says, I'll buy the sheep from you. The guy said, no, it's not for sale. It's so we can get the glandulars. He says, well, I don't want you to kill it. He says, look, every day we're killing these sheep. You're here, you're seeing this. We're sorry you have to see this. This is just the reality of it. Have you ever, and he says this is what the other guy says. He says, have you ever seen the hamburger that you eat when it still had a face and a heart? Did you ever see the little lamb at Easter before you had it for your festivals and your religious dinner, whatever? He said, all these animals, they all are aware of what's going to happen to them. And he said, stop being sick and we'll stop slaughtering them. That's what the German guy said. And so we left and we went back to the resort. And one woman was just livid. As I'm walking out the door, this big thump hits me in the back of the head. And she came up behind me and just slugged me right in the back of the head. And I turned around and I looked at her and I said, why? Why'd you need to? She said, you shouldn't have shown us this. You're cruel. I said, I'm cruel? I'm the vegan. I'm the one who has these animals on my ranch, and I love them, and I care for them. I'm not the one who is causing these animals to be sacrificed. I just brought you here to show you a mirror of the larger world in which you live, to show you a clearer picture, the one that seems to be so limited and myopic and distorted that you see of yourself. Anyhow, that afternoon, I was the comment of debate. It was not a positive debate. It was, I'm sure that if they could have hung me up, stripped me out, and taken my glands, they would have. Not a single person there saw the message that I tried to share with them. And Klaus Martin, who was a very strong intellectual guy, says, Gary says, you know, it's almost like a shock therapy. People don't want to be responsible for their actions. And we had this discussion coming back on the plane. My buddy became a vegetarian, and he's been a vegetarian ever since. In fact, he was at the filming last night. And it was, it's interesting sometimes what it takes to get people's attention. I have not yet produced it. I'm so over the top in right now in work and commitment socially and environmentally and human rights. I've got about 16 major issues I'm dealing with every single day plus teaching. I don't have time to do this one documentary yet. I intend to get to it later. But I'm going to do a documentary for children. And it's going to be about where does your food come from? And it will not be editorialized. It'll just be a completely honest depiction of where all the things they eat come from. I want them to see it. I want them to see where the animals come from and the chickens and all the things they get used to liking because they don't have to look at it. I'm also going to show, I'm going to be filming over in Bangkok in 2.5 months. I'm going to show them where dogs and puppies, kittens and puppies are taken and boiled each day for lunch in restaurants. And so someone's pet in one country becomes someone's meal in another one. I'm going to show them a sugarcane field and then show them how sugarcane's made down in Jamaica or Barbados or Trinidad. I'm going to show them where wheat and then how it grows and then how it's made into a flour. I believe if we show them each of these things and the consequence of it, then they'll realize that they have some choices. Then show them the alternative where they can break free of this. And then get this on into schools and get it on at least where there's some progressive teachers and educators who allow this to occur. In the interim, I still have, so that's one of the projects I have on the agenda. And hopefully their adults will watch this also. And yes, it's going to make people angry. You know, the truth will set you free, but first it gets you angry. And we got to get through the angry part first, but we got to show it and for people to know it. Thank you very much for your call. They finished up your question. You know, look for vegetarian capsules because you have no proof whatsoever that the regular gelatin made from cattle's that you're using is not from a contaminated cow. There's no way of knowing. So since there is no way of knowing, don't take the risk. Okay? And there's now vegetarian capsules available, so you can take them in vegetarian and kosher form. I'm Gary Nall. That completes another program. I want to thank you very much for listening. I'll look forward to sharing more with you on tomorrow's program. We've got a lot of interesting stuff tomorrow I'm going to talk about. So stay tuned. Have a good day.